This week on the Boag World Show, we're joined by Brett Honnard, Sam Barnes and Holly Davis to talk Agile. This week's show is sponsored by Full Story and FreshBooks. World Show, the podcast about user experience, digital strategy and digital management. My name is Paul Boag and normally I'll be joined by Marcus Lillington. Unfortunately, he's not with us this week. He has had a last minute thing come up, which means that he can't be joining us. But it's okay, because we have a panel, a plethora of guests joining us this week. And I actually think that's why Marcus isn't here. I think that he felt like he was being pushed out of the limelight and so threw a little bit of a tantrum. That's what I think happened anyway. But so our panel of guests is Holly Davis. How are you? Good to have you back on the show.
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me to be back.
Twice in a season. That's how good you were.
You're making me blush now.
This is you. You're in La La Land, aren't you? Because you're about to go off on holiday, so you're checked out of this podcast entirely.
No, I'm fully committed as always. I've written notes and everything.
Oh, that was the thing that amused me about Marcus. When I talked to him on the phone and he said that he couldn't be on today, he said, it's really annoying as well because it's the first podcast I've ever actually prepared for. And it was like, oh, great. Yeah, fine. Wonderful. Yeah, I'm glad that those previous 300 plus podcasts you made an effort for. So there you go. We've also got Sam Barnes joining us on the show. Hello, Sam.
Hello.
So have you prepared? Got lots of notes?
Of course. Absolutely. This is our field, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you made the effort buying a new mic as
well. I did. Well, I think I messed it up last time. So do it right this time.
Blame the podcaster, never the guest.
Well, it's probably Marcus, actually, as he's not here, right?
Yes. What a great idea. So you've got a Samson Go, cutest...
Yeah, tiny little mic. It just clips on the edge of the laptop, and apparently, according to you, it sounds good. So it's very cute, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. Well done. And finally, representing the other side of the Atlantic is Brett Honnard. Hello, Brett.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
Well, it's a pleasure as always, Brett. So what have you been up to these days? Anything interesting?
Oh, a little bit of everything. Finishing up a book, planning a new conference. I mentioned to you earlier, I'm working with White October Events to plan a conference in April of 2017. The conference is called Ground Control, and cool. It will be a new conference for digital project managers.
So. I'm very impressed the way you picked up at my subtle segue into that. Yeah. You spotted what I was doing there.
You're so kind.
Well, you know, I'm a huge fan of digital project management conferences. There needs to be more of them. I was a bit disappointed, man, because at the beginning of the show, before we started recording, Brett said to me, look, Paul, I've got this conference coming up in April next year. And I thought, oh, he's going to invite me to speak. But no, he just wanted to plug it on the podcast. What an arse. Just typical. Talking of arsey comments, Brett, how's the book going? I think
you're
we had
hilarious.
A bit of a bet.
The book is going quite well. Mm-hmm. I am working currently on my final chapter, and I just recruited five technical reviewers. So at the end of this month, the book will go out. The manuscript will go out to technical reviewers, and then it starts to get real. So
when we had our bet as to who could finish their book first, were we didn't kind of work out the details, did we? Were we talking about the first draft? Because in which case I've won, or are we talking the first to market?
I don't remember a bet, but I don't put it past you to make these kinds of things up. So I'm okay with losing. I don't even know when it's going to go to market. I would say I'm ahead of my deadline, which I'm very proud of.
Ooh.
Very project manager-y of me. I'm not sure how long it'll take me to work through the remaining bits, you know, lots of work to do as the technical edits come back, and then, a full, you know, copy editing process. And then I'll be working through sort of illustrations and screenshots and all of that stuff. So, it's exciting. I've been told that I'm over the most critical part and the most difficult part, which feels really good.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it is. The getting that initial draft written is the hardest part.
Yeah.
But although the other bit I don't like is going back through and adding the illustrations and stuff like that. I've done it as I've gone along this time, because right. It just drives me nuts. So there you go. But yeah, I think we'll conclude that I won.
I think we would too. I think you'll probably be, your book will be out before mine, which is good, because then mine can come out and then you can start promoting mine.
Oh, I see. Yeah, we don't want to come out at the same time. Otherwise, you know, I won't be able to promote
yours. Maybe a little sales figure competition is needed.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Hang on a minute, Sam. Are you just setting us against one another?
I'm literally staring at it.
Yeah, really?
Because I have to say, I didn't remember the bet with Brett until you said something. And so for all I know, you might have made that up.
He's one of my closest friends. I've got to give him this when he's live, right? That's how it goes.
I think it's it probably was said in the last podcast that we did together, and Sam listened to it and read the transcript because he hangs on to every word.
Oh, wow. he does hero worship, isn't it?
I cannot deny this.
Anyway, when are you going to write one? No, forget it. No, Sam writing a book, silly. Holly, when are you going to write a book?
Hopefully one day.
Would you like to? Is it something you'd like to do?
I absolutely love writing. Prefer writing more than talking. Maybe one day, if I come up with a strong idea.
Oh, you don't need a strong idea. Look at the stuff I churn out. It's quantity over quality every time. That's my general approach to life in general, really.
Well, it's worked
absolutely.
Well for you.
Don't rush, guys, to contradict that, by the way. There was just an awkward silence at that point, wasn't there?
We're just giggling.
So, yes, it has worked for me, Holly. Thank you for acknowledging that.
You're welcome.
So, anyway, today's a bit of an experiment for me, okay? Which hasn't started great, because this is already the second time we're recording this. But next season, I'm talking about doing roundtables like this the whole time. So every episode, we're gonna have a selection of different guests, and we're gonna cover, you know, lots of different. So we're gonna have a designer, we're gonna have a developer, we're gonna have a project manager, we're gonna, you know, have somebody from each kind of discipline. They'll all bring along a different thing for us to discuss. That's the idea anyway, but we thought we would try the technology out this week, and we thought we would experiment on our tame project managers, which is Brett, Sam and Holly. So I'm sorry, you guys are guinea pigs.
Not the first time.
You don't care.
Well, we're into it.
Good. That's good. So I thought, what should we talk about? And it occurred to me that all season, right? So we've done what? 13 episodes. Well, this is the 13th episode, right? The last one of the season. Not once have we talked about Agile. Can you believe that? A project management season that I know that doesn't talk about Agile. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to spend a bit of time talking about Agile and Agile development and how Agile fits into your average web project. But before we do that, I just want to quickly talk about our first sponsor, which is Full Story. Full Story is a pixel perfect session playback tool that empowers every person in your company to help build the best online experience for your customers, because you just need to add one tiny little script and every click, every swipe, every scroll, everything that the user does is recorded. There's no manual event tagging, so you don't have to go in and say, oh, I want to know how many people have clicked on this, so I need to tag that as an event. None of that. All you do is install this little script, and then you can get high fidelity playback, right? So you can watch user sessions including the full DOM and console logs, which is just brilliant for diagnosing bugs and that kind of thing, as it was run in the customer's browser. So you can do things like funnel analytics, you can do detailed searches, you could do customer segmentation, all of that kind of stuff to drill down and find out exactly what's going on. And it's great, as I said, for bug finding tools, and it integrates with support desk software. So you can sign up today and get a full story for 2 weeks, absolutely free, to give it a go. There's a few things that just to kind of give you the top level summary before you go and play with it. It will work with your Ajax heavy single page app or any kind of anything built on a modern framework like React or Angular. No problem at all. Full story will still record everything perfectly. It only takes about 5 minutes to implement. You just copy and paste the JavaScript into any page that you want to record. That's it. Every user action and element on the page is automatically captured without the need to manually tag anything. Because every aspect of the user session is captured, you can use a kind of Google-like search engine to answer very specific questions. So you've got this really rich data set to draw upon, and the interface is deadly simple to use. I run it on my own site, so it has to be pretty simple. So it's something that designers, engineers, PMs, project managers, PMs is project managers, support people, marketing, whoever, can easily jump in and immediately start learning about it. Something. So to give it a go, go and check it out at boag.world/try-full-story. Cool, that's that out of the way. Let's talk agile. So I've got three questions because as you imagine, over the season, we've had quite a few questions about Agile. So what I've done is I've kind of picked and chosen and kind of mashed questions together to give us something to talk about on the show. So it's not, they're not specific individuals this time. It's just a collection. So first one is, you can't talk about project management without mentioning Agile. So what do people think about Agile versus Waterfall? What are the pros and cons? And do you use it wholesale or do you pick and choose? Holly, do you mind if I start with you, as I get the impression you're the only person that's done any prep for this.
cool. Yeah, I'm happy to kick off. I'd say about 70 or 80% of the projects I PM at White October are agile of nature. So we work in sort of fortnightly sprints. And I actually kind of transitioned about 3.5 years ago from an agency that was more sort of 70, 80% split between Waterfall, maybe even higher than that. And one of my main reasons for moving was having a kind of difficult last project at that agency where I thought the project and the client would have been much more well suited to Agile, and how at that point it was a sort of mainly theoretical knowledge of Agile, but I was kind of fed up of issuing change requests and charging the client every time she changed her mind. And I thought, like, I'm sure there's a better way. And kind of looking back at why I moved and how we're using Agile, obviously it's not sort of a magic bullet. It doesn't fix everything overnight, but I have definitely seen benefits, and I've become, during the last 3 years or so, quite an advocate of Agile. It's not suitable to every project. We've yet to really make it work on kind of CMS projects or mobile work, but definitely for sort of complex software builds with front end, back end, working in sort of fortnightly sprints, and all the Agile ceremonies have really helped us work better together as teams. There's a stronger emphasis, I think, on the product owner and the client being involved and collaborating with the team in terms of sort of defining the scope in small batches of work, which I much prefer over the sort of the big reveals and the upfront technical specs. Mm. So as a sort of PM, I definitely prefer it as a methodology, and I believe and think the principles of Agile have sort of remarkable benefits on sort of the team culture and ethos of how you manage technical software development projects. So yeah, I'm a fan, I guess, in summary.
So, I mean, you said there that you did, you don't find they work particularly well on a CMS project. So what you're talking about, are you saying that they tend to work better on kind of web apps rather than websites? Is that what you mean, or is it something else?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I mean. I mean, that's my personal experience. I think you can probably adjust the process to work for different types of projects, but I wonder maybe if it ties into the fact on those sort of projects the scope is more fixed, so perhaps Agile doesn't work as well. Maybe something like Kanban would work better, but yeah, I find where the scope is likely to change and adapt as you work through the project, Agile works best.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it.
This is a bit of an embarrassing question. Can you tell me what Kanban is? I've heard about it, but I've no idea what it is.
Yeah, sure.
I know it's, you know, it's a project management methodology, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But how does it, so it's a bit like Agile, but not?
There's definitely Agile principles, but instead of working in sprints, you continuously prioritize and the backlog, which is essentially the to-do column, and instead of looking at kind of velocity as a measure of progress, it's more about cycle time and how the issue count from kind of start to finish in that journey from to-do in progress to test to done. And you can kind of do reports on, you know, how many issues you're getting through as a team. And I've used it more on sort of support projects, but I have used it on a couple of projects where the scope is fixed. So sort of sprints is more sort of an arbitrary, you know, it's not necessarily useful for those sort of projects. But it still instills, you know, collaboration and involvement from the product owner to prioritize the backlog. But on some projects, I know that, you know, the developers can pick from a list of tasks that are prioritized at the top of the backlog rather than kind of working through the things in a certain order. I'd like to learn to do it, you know it a bit more. I've kind of used it on a very small level. I don't know if Sam and Brett have used it.
I think like you, I've used it for support work, work that doesn't need to happen. It doesn't have many dependencies. I've also known like operations teams use it as well. So there's just work that has to be done. It's just ongoing. So it's just a nice way for someone to prioritize it. I think it's a lighter touch than either Waterfall or
Yeah, I'd
Scrum,
agree with that.
That's interesting. Going back to the kind of website, you know, and using Agile for developing a straight website. I mean, Brett or Sam or whoever really, have your experiences been the same? Do you think Agile just doesn't suit a CMS type build? And if so, what is it about it that makes it incompatible?
So I think it's interesting because I'd never thought about it in terms of the process working for a web app versus a website, but I do see how that definitely makes sense because I think adding a CMS just adds complexity to a project, you know, when it comes to technology and building it and getting stakeholders involved. But I think for me, I think the biggest factor when it comes to trying to run a project with an Agile methodology is the people involved, particularly clients. Because I think a lot of the work that we do, typically that happens earlier in a project when it comes to either research or design, does require a lot of outside input into the process. And that outside input can be from a client project manager or a team of stakeholders on a client team. And I think that's usually what tends to slow a process down, whether it be Agile or Waterfall or whatever you're using. So I think for me, I like to pull aspects of Agile into projects to make it work. Think of it almost as like Frankensteining a process that works for just, you know, the team who is actually building the product, but also the people that you're almost selling the product to as well, right? Because on some level, that's what we're doing when we're creating designs. We're selling a design for something. And trying to gain input and consensus from stakeholders within the client organization. So I recently worked on a couple of projects that were touted as being agile. But as I got further and further into them, I realized that this particular agency, and this is me working as a freelance project manager with an agency, they're using the kind of principles of Agile and the ceremonies and all of the things that if you were to read about Agile, you'd say, yes, this is Agile. But as you get more into it, you realize, well, there are so many dependencies when it comes to a client team. And there are still so many places where they can hold up a process, whether that comes to making a decision on something or delivering content or, you know, whatever it might be. So those are the kinds of things that kind of held it up.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm just quite interested in which bits of Agile you find particularly, you know, worth keeping and what you kind of discard, if that makes sense.
So personally, I think the things that I really like are the fact of having a backlog and user stories. So things to point back to that are roll up to or specific tasks that roll up to goals. I think that's really helpful to keep everyone on track. I also really like the daily stand up. Just as a PM, I like to know kind of what's happening and what the potential issues are on the project. And I like this, you know, what Agile calls the ceremonies, like, so sprint planning, you know, the work that's going to be done over the next couple of weeks, and then the sprint review, coming back around and discussing what's been done. And I think it's, if you're going to run that an Agile project in an agency setting with clients, it's really important to hang on to those things, because you really want to do everything that you can to keep the communication transparent and keep the team honest about the work that they're doing and what can actually be done. You know, basically keeping expectations in check.
Sam?
Well, I think Holly kind of, for me, Holly got close to the real problem for me, which is she said that CMS, you know, some projects basically are good for Agile and some aren't. That's what it boiled down to.
Yeah.
For me, it's about exactly what he said, the unknowns or the scale. So one thing I remember reading about Agile was that, you know, you shouldn't confuse manufacturing with web development. An analogy used was designing a car versus building the car. So the idea was that to design the car, you know, you need to go through an exploratory process and it's going to change. You're going to find out things, you have to adapt and whatever. But once you've sort of nailed the design, you're ready to put it on the production line. You can just create that spec and fire it off, and it'll just, you know, it'll build and repeat. And I think the similar thing is when you're working with like a software development project, you know, something bigger. Quite frankly, the unknowns are more. There's a lot more that you don't know, probably a lot more integrations into systems, and just a whole load of more variables that you can't control at the beginning. Whereas if you're working on something that, you know, is your bread and butter, perhaps, or something you've done with a client many, many times, be it campaign work, even sort of small CMS-based websites, then, you know, you're going to find that there are parts of that process or that relationship with that client that actually fit a kind of a repeatable cycle. It really depends on that. That for me is the key sort of difference between the two.
So it is a bit of a loaded question, but, you know, if we're saying there's some bits of Agile we like, by implication, there are some bits that we don't often fit with the projects and that we dump. Which are the bits you tend to dump, Sam?
Tend to dump? Oh, wow. We could do a whole season on that. It sounds like a really rubbish answer, but the truth is I completely agree with Brett. It really does depend on the client, the team, and the particular project. I mean, one of the things that will often get dumped in an agency environment is the sort of product owner interaction. Now, the product owner, you know, should be the client, but the reality of that is very difficult to get a client so engaged on a daily basis. Yeah. You can have a
Which
proxy.
Is a shame, because that's actually, you know, in theory, one of the most valuable bits potentially of Agile is having the client embedded in the process and seeing how it works the whole time.
Absolutely. It's frustrating. I mean, there are ways you can use something called a proxy product owner. And this is whether you're an internal team or an agency. It just means that there's a representative on the internal production team. who is sort of masking as the product owner. Really, you're just kind of being a traditional PM. You're understanding requirements and translating them into the team. So it's debatable, you know, the value of that as such in terms of the actual product owner there. But it's how you get by if you're going to work agile in certain environments.
Mm. Brett,
I agree. I think, you know, if I'm on the client side and I've hired an agency or even just a group of people like this to create something for me, I don't care as much about the process because I have potentially 5 or 10 other projects happening at the same time and other things that I need to handle in my day to day. I want you to just come in and guide me through a process that's going to work. I probably am not going to have time to be a product owner and be in every single meeting, especially a daily stand-up. So I think that's kind of where things start to break down is, you know, when you run an agile process, you place a pretty high expectation in terms of people's time and involvement in a project. And I think it's just not realistic to ask all clients to do that. When you do find a client who can do it, I think it's a dream scenario and I think it can work out really well. But I think, yeah, I think the roles kind of tend to break down and it's something that you drop. I think too, like the thing that I am just not necessarily a fan of is in general is just rigidity. Like I don't want to be tied to something really specific. You know, I want to be able to pivot at any point in a project and say, oh, the way we're doing this isn't working. We're going to try something else for the sake of getting it done faster and having a better product at the end of the day. And I think when you tend to follow a process so tightly, you lose that flexibility. And I think you kind of, the scope of things tends to creep a little bit. And I think, you know, there are ways of being more efficient without sticking to a single way of operating.
Jumping in there, Brett, it's actually another twist on the whole repeatable analogy, because thinking about that, where I've seen the sort of rigid agile sort of processes working is where the environment is a lot more predictable. So, for instance, internal production teams working on a product, you know, for their own company. When you get that right and you get the heartbeat of all the ceremonies going, and there's a lot less that can kind of come out of the blue and surprise you. Or if it does, there's mechanisms to deal with it because it's happened before. But when you're dealing with clients, multiple clients, as you all will know, you can never tell what's going to happen. So that ability to change quickly is absolutely, absolutely critical in terms of changing process.
Yep. I think too, it's just, you know, my mind always goes to design and the decisions that need to be made. And I think that's just based on where my interest lies within the process. Like I get really into UX and design. And I think that's where it tends to break down a little bit more. I do think that once you get into development, it is a little bit easier, right? Because things are mapped out. There are less decisions being made and you can really be heads down getting work done. The projects that I worked on recently, we were doing design and code all together, and it was pretty exciting to see that come together and see, you know, a client. There wouldn't be a big reveal because they'd be a part of the process, but seeing the fact that, you know, we're building something in a sprint that is potentially shippable within 2 weeks, that's pretty cool.
Mm. That brings us on to the next kind of set of questions, really, which is one of the big criticisms about Agile is that it isn't very designer friendly, as you just said, Brett. I'm interested in whether you guys agree with that or what adaptation needs to be made to Agile in order to make it a more design friendly process. I mean, Holly, do you want to kick us off again on that one?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I think the good far outweighs the bad, but it is a challenge because I think as a designer, you need to be challenging the level of fidelity for each user story in a sprint and kind of the level at which you need to produce your designs at. You know, sometimes it's a sketch and sometimes it will be, you know, full-on design. But I think designers, once they get used to that, find it quite empowering and quite liberating. And it really focuses the whole team on kind of reuse in terms of sort of a component library. And once you've got a certain level of design that you're happy with and the client's happy with, kind of looking in the, you know, the subsequent sprints at what components can be reused for those pages or templates. Well, I think that's quite a good kind of behaviour and a financially sound way to approach a project. We found kind of two things which have made it a lot easier from a design point of view. The first one is we tend to start these larger Agile projects with a preparation stage, which we internally refer to as runway. And runway just determines the minimum amount of design and UX we need to do before we can start a sprint. And that kind of differs per project in terms of length and what exactly it involves. But the type of activities might include competitor analysis, building personas, reviewing brand guidelines, starting a mood board, site map, style tiles, sort of basic grey box wireframes. And at that stage, we feel able to go into sprint development, knowing we've done enough upfront work, but not too much to define the design, but enough for the designer to feel comfortable, because I think previous to that, we didn't have that stage, and designers going into kind of an initial sprint with, you know, a bunch of work that needs to happen before they can start producing designs, and the pressure right from day one was on the designer to deliver, you know, designs in sprint, which is just, you know, retrospectively not achievable. I think they've found that kind of the starting block of the project and kind of the foundation of which they build upon really useful. And then I'd say the second thing was is sprint refinement, which is another Agile ceremony. So if you're working in a 2-week sprint, 1 week into the sprint, you would sit down as a whole team, look at the stories in the next sprint, and look at kind of what level of UX we can do prior to that sprint starting. Start thinking about, you know, the user flows, any areas of complexity. If we want to do any user testing or corridor testing, we can do that ahead of the sprint starting. And I found those two things, so, you know, the runway and sprint refinement during the development really helps. And our design team also do something called Fresh Eyes, where they get together as a design team and project team members are invited, if they're available, to look at each other's projects, which helps the team to take a step back and see the project at a higher level and highlights areas in need of attention, because I have found working on Agile projects that you get so caught up into you know, the current sprint that you don't take that sometimes step back and think, you know, is this working at a higher level? And I think, and that's a good,
I mean, that's so important from a design point of view as well. I mean, designers tend to look at things holistically, especially in the early parts of a project where, you know, they're looking across the whole thing. Does this user flow work from, you know, one place to another? Yeah. And that's where I've always struggled with Agile, is that you end up getting bogged down in, you know, a specific piece of functionality or a specific, you know, part of the experience, and you end up making design decisions that don't then translate well across the rest of the website. But I'm guessing, you know, things like the sprint refinement and the fresh eyes bit would flag those?
Yeah, to some degree. And I think what's quite useful, if you can do in the timescales allow for it, is to build in kind of user trials, which have specific goals, which break up the project into even smaller chunks, kind of larger than a sprint. But you can say, we're working to this goal, and at this point, we're going to be able to test this certain area of the system. And that will, you know, quickly unveil if there are any problems with the user flow or any usability issues, which you can then, you know, plan for in the next, you know, or rectify in the next user trial. So I think that's important, rather than sort of leaving that sort of, you know, high level user flow reassurance and testing till the end. And kind of giving the team the ability to, or empowering them to be able to add UX improvements to the backlog. You know, we often add new stories to backlogs, but it's up to the whole team, really. If you see something that's niggling you or something that doesn't seem, you know, to be working as well as it could do, to be able to empower the team to, like, that's a good thing to be doing. And then to be reviewing those at the end of each sprint and thinking, you know, should we tackle these now or should we come back to them?
Mm. Brett, you obviously have some concerns about Agile from a user experience and design perspective. What problems have you encountered?
Like I said, I think it's mostly been about decisions. And I think, too, it's a lot of it has to do with setting expectations with clients on what they're going to see when and how things can evolve. I think it's probably really important to sit down at the very beginning of the project and be really clear about what the stories are based on the goals for the project. And I guess what those stories will then sort of turn into functionally. I think my biggest concern is always that, you know, you deliver something, a client will see a piece of functionality and they won't be happy with it. And then you have to continue iterating on it throughout the course of the project, whereas there are a lot of pieces that you need to work on. And that is the goal of Agile, right? It's not that, you know, everything is done within one sprint. It is all about iteration. But I think that you have to be really diligent about setting expectations on what the definition of done is. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be really difficult, particularly in those bigger projects where you do want some space and time to kind of think and iterate, but you've got a deadline. And I think that's, you know, in our world, in the agency world, is you're constantly working with a fixed budget and a fixed deadline. Whereas I think Agile is a little more open in terms of iteration and launching with a product that is an MVP rather than a product that is a final done deal with a closed out budget, you know?
Yeah, which is a whole nother conversation about how many organizations finance, you know, digital projects and how they see them as this kind of capital expense that you invest in every few years and then you do a redesign, which is probably not the best way of viewing your website, but, you know.
Exactly.
Sam, what about you from your experiences from a design point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of my points have been touched on really, but it's really one of those areas, I think, when people start to think about, you know, working a bit more Agile, they don't consider that. I certainly didn't. It kind of took me by surprise a little bit. And it's really just twisting the whole traditional workflow on its head for design, I think. And you mentioned it yourself about what we found is a decent solution. I wouldn't say it's you know, the be-all and end-all, but it does require that teams that were working on, say, projects for the duration of that project as the design team or single designer, if you're working on products especially or across teams, you need to really get aligned with the rest of your design team and have a holistic approach to that design strategy. You need to know where you're going at some kind of level, because when you get down to the sprint planning, it's so micro level that it's hard to sort of bridge those two worlds, I think, is what I found the designers particularly struggled with. We tried all sorts of things. We started doing the design exactly the same in one sprint, and we just found it didn't work for us because, you know, it's one of my, I guess, frustrations with the community around Agile in a way is that the context of Agile is never focused on. So you know, starting up Agile using Scrum in a startup or a small agency, building a product is completely different to an agency with clients or a very large software house that already has, you know, 10 years of legacy systems in place and processes and all this kind of tech debt and things like that. I mean, one thing that we found helped slightly, but it did have a downside, was we sometimes got we either did like something similar to what Holly's team do, but we called it a sprint zero. So it was kind of like a 2 weeks to kind of prep everything, get some ideas in place. You weren't tied to delivery, I guess you could say. We also tried doing design one sprint ahead. So, you know, we would know what was in the backlog. We know how it's prioritized. We know what's coming up, essentially. So we would get some design people inside each team thinking about that sprint ahead. The benefit of that was that, of course, we were able to go into the sort of production sprint and be a lot more efficient at delivering. But what we found to be the downside was actually to do with the designers as people themselves. They felt very isolated and outside of their own team, you know, so they're always in a different world. So I wouldn't say I've worked somewhere where we cracked it. It's a really hard thing, but the context is so important. A lot of blogs, a lot of people talk about how they do it, how easy. But again, if you're starting with a greenfield product with a very small amount of very clued in people, I think it can appear to be easy than it actually is in the reality of most businesses.
Yeah. I mean, from my point of view, because for a long time, I utterly dismissed Agile because I come from a design background and a UX background, and it just felt wrong to me.
One thing that Holly said was the word component. And I think that kind of stands out to me as
very much
anti what a designer wants to bring to the world. You know, suddenly you're being, it's like a factory again, you know, it was a key word for me that.
Yeah, yeah. And also the majority of websites that I produce, and I imagine a lot of agencies produce, are not web apps. They're content heavy websites, CMS based projects. Yeah. Eventually, I did come around, but it's quite a, as Brett put it, Frankenstein approach to Agile, which is that I keep the sprint mentality, but instead of a sprint consisting of addressing a series of user cards dedicated to a specific set of functionality, let's be honest, what I do is each sprint is dedicated to a different level of fidelity. So the first sprint may well be just doing information architecture and some drawings on bits of paper that we then test and iterate within the sprint. Okay. Then you go from there. Maybe, the developers install the base CMS and you put the information architecture in that and you kind of map out the structure of the website a little bit. And you identify, key bullet point for the different content that appears in different sections, and that's it. Then the next sprint, again, you're testing and iterating on that. And then the next sprint, you're adding in some typography and some basic layout. And the next sprint, you're adding in a little bit more, all built into the final, onto the final platform. Mm. And that essentially you iterate the entire site in levels of fidelity, adding in color, adding in more and more layout, adding in mobile friendly, you start mobile friendly and work towards the desktop. But anyway, but you get the idea.
Yeah, that sounds like a good solution in many situations I can think of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems to work quite well within those kinds of projects where they're design and content led rather than functionality led. You know, expecting a developer, but even then, I mean, I was going to say expecting a developer to iterate functionality is not impossible, actually. You know, to begin with, you ignore all your error handling and you ignore, whether every little bit of that functionality works. You get the main core of it working and you iterate in that way. But I guess what you're not doing, which is a fundamental no-no in proper Agile, is you haven't got shippable code at the end of each sprint.
Exactly. I mean, you talked earlier about which bits do you often dump. I guess I would bet that a lot of people actually dump that, even though they wouldn't really recognize that. Because what you just described there sounds like a very sort of sensible approach. But I was thinking that as you were saying it, that it's actually throwing away one of the main tenants. But, I don't know. Again, small company, Greenfield, I'm sure they can for their first maybe year be shippable every 2 weeks. But it's contextual,
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Holly, what do you think about my random idea?
Yeah, no, I think it's brilliant. And that's how we have been approaching kind of our CMS projects. And the distinction, like Sam said, is that Agile is kind of splitting stories into small vertical slices, which can be shipped at the end of the sprint. Whereas the process you talk about, I think, works much better for CMS projects working in more horizontal slices. So you're building up CMS website in layers of fidelity, starting at quite a sort of a prototype-y level and then building on top of that and iterating on top of that. So I think that is the distinction, really, that that is kind of working more in horizontal layers and Agile's working more in sort of small vertical slices. But yeah, I can definitely see in practice how that approach works better for those CMS projects which are sort of content-heavy.
And actually, you reach a point where you can almost switch from horizontal to vertical. Mm. Once you've got the structure of the website in place, you've got, the flow, the design pretty much, then it really becomes more of a development issue and a content population issue. And then you can switch to be vertical and deal with section after section. So it just moves away. My problem, to begin with, we started off doing this kind of sprint zero and the runway approach, but we kept feeling the need to revisit the design because it wasn't quite right. And we had to keep stepping back. And I guess your sprint refinements will do that. But looking at it horizontally just seemed to work for us a little bit better. Okay, so let's move on then to our final question, which is relating to kind of how to present Agile to clients. Now, we've already said that Agile works better for some clients than others, but, you know, with any client that hasn't encountered Agile before, even if we think they're an appropriate client, we need to essentially introduce them to the idea of Agile in whatever form it takes and explain it. And so many clients are used to fixed price projects with well-defined deliverables. I'm interested how you guys have sold or introduced that Agile methodology to clients in such a way that they still feel confident they're going to get a deliverable within their budget. Well, Sam, do you want to kick us off this time?
Yeah, I mean, really, my answer to that is to not sell Agile. It kind of sounds cheesy, but it's true as well that a lot of people will go into a client meeting, pre-sales or whoever they interact with Agile being the only solution that's available, and it, because it's the best. I just fundamentally disagree with that. So I would say I'm not going to ever go in there and sell Agile. I'm going to go in there and sell them, you know, the best delivery method for the project.
Yeah.
And for them. So, you know, what I would do is, if I wanted to go down that road, or if I spotted that it was definitely going to look like Agile to me was the better way of doing things, but maybe the client doesn't realise, I would sort of ask questions first. So I, you know, I would ask how their previous projects have gone with either, you know, the internal teams or previous suppliers, whatever it might be. Within those answers, sometimes you get a little bit of leeway to bring in Agile. So often people will say, you know, my projects are too long, or they're always late, they cost too much, always over budget, you know, constantly delivering wrong functionality, and so on and so on. The main thing that I'm looking for here is to get them used to the idea, or get them agreeable that change is needed. You know, we don't want to repeat that. That kind of gives me a platform to suggest another type of solution. Of course, it all sounds great until you get into the mechanics, and there'll be lots and lots of questions. I would never make it sound easier than Waterfall. I think that's a real big problem. In our industry, actually, doing Agile using Scrum, which is what I've done most, it's not easy. It's really hard, and I think people kind of oversell it a little bit. They oversell it as the silver bullet solution, and it's not. So I would never say that. And really, it's just being prepared to answer any questions and concerns that they have. You know, not just about the process, you know, but things like how this would work with your finance team, you know, explaining about a proxy PO and all these things that can be used, or sometimes you would present case studies. Ideally, and it's possible now with clients that perhaps have been with you for a number of years and they used to work Waterfall and now they work using Agile, and how they found the difference. That can, I mean, whatever you say in a meeting room, in a pre-sales or anything like that, they're going to trust, I think, the words of a previous client over yours, no matter what, when you're trying to sell a new funky way of working. So they're just some of the ways that I've got people on board. But I think the key is to not make it sound like it's the be all and end all. It's just another way of delivering work. Has its challenges. We talked about pros and cons earlier. Just being very honest about it, I think. That's been my approach, really.
I want to ask Holly in a minute, because she uses probably Agile more often than anybody else. But I'm quite interested in one thing you just said there, Sam. You talked about a proxy PO. Yeah. What's a proxy purchase order, I presume you mean, but what is that?
No, product owner. Proxy
product owner.
Yes.
I thought you were talking about the way it was funded. Okay, yes.
I'm not that financial.
I thought, oh, I like this. So you have like a preliminary purchase order? Oh,
absolutely, okay. I'll sign that off.
Yeah, trademarked Sam Barnes.
Thank you. There's my book.
All right, yeah, there you go. You can write an entire book about that. Holly, what about you? I mean, how do you, your clients have to get used to the way that you tend to work? So how do you introduce it to them?
Yeah, so when I first started at Worktober and we started to do projects like this, they were normally sort of on a time and materials basis. We found with these sort of projects, the scope tends to increase as you work through the project. New stories are added. And so, you know, projects were going over budget, but they were legitimately going over budget in terms of like the product owner was deciding to add new stories and to prioritize those stories. But what we found a better way to kind of present it to the client and to work with our clients is to do a price per point. So basically what we do now is convert our client's budget to a points budget, and we estimate our backlog. Normally after we start a project, we do an exercise called user story mapping, which builds a product backlog, and we then estimate that of a sort of high level, like a ballpark estimate in story points, and then convert that to a point budget, which the client could then use. So you know, that point factors in everyone's time on the team. It includes design, development, AM, PM, testing, and it's the amount of cost to the agency to deliver that point from in progress to done. And the client only pays for that point when they sign it off in adherence to the acceptance criteria, which they work with the team to write. And like Brett and Sam sort of mentioned earlier, this works very well if the product owner and the client is very closely involved in the project. But, you know, one of the demands, like Brett said, is, you know, we tend to ask clients who want to work in this fashion, you know, for up to 2 days of their week to be dedicated to the product and the project team. And some clients absolutely love that and they choose us because of that. And some clients just don't have that level of time. So we agree up front and, like Sam says, ask the right question to find out if this is going to be the right way to deliver the project. But if the client can give you that and be involved in kind of defining the definition of done at a feature level and then signing that off on the basis of, you know, what they decided would be the spec for that feature, and then we only invoice, you know, once they have signed it off, and then the client feels a lot more in control of their budget because they know they've got a point budget that can't kind of fluctuate or change, and they can decide how to prioritize those things in accordance with that budget, which helps them feel, you know, they're not going to go over budget unless points, you know, increase during the project. But then they're still in control if you know, a point started off at a user story mapping phase at one point, and then when we're talking about it in sprint planning and it grew to like a 3-point story, and we would then say that to the client and we'd say, you know, we've introduced a lot of complexity. When we estimated it at the start of the project at one point, it was based on doing XYZ. We've now increased the complexity of the story, which has increased the estimate. You know, do you want us to look at breaking that story down into, you know, 2 half-point stories, or reducing the complexity to bring your point budget back down? And we found that to really work well, and clients respond to it very, very well at the start of projects when we're starting to engage with clients. They feel quite comfortable with that as kind of a metric for managing their projects.
Yes, that makes perfect. I'm hesitant. Yeah,
blow my mind.
I'm sitting here thinking, wow. I think the thing that I'm thinking is that ultimately, if you're going to use Agile, you're saying one of two things to the client. You're either saying, I cannot guarantee that for what you want, that we're going to be able to do it within that price, right? And you've got round that by saying the price is fixed, but then the trade-off of that is, well, we can't guarantee you will deliver a specific thing within the amount of money. So that's, I still strikes me as a hard pill to swallow as a client, of essentially saying, well, we can't tell you how much it's going to cost, or we can't tell you what we're going to deliver within that cost. I mean, Brett, what's your experience in this?
I don't really have that much experience in that realm, to be honest with you. But I'm with you. I think that's always been my biggest concern is, you know, how can I as a client know that what I'm going to get at the end of the number of sprints that we've agreed to, or the number of points that we've agreed to, I'm going to be happy with what I get. And that would make me the most nervous. And As I was listening to Holly, I'm like sitting here taking notes because I think it's a really smart idea. But I wonder if that also in sort of increases the amount of project management time on a project. I'm wondering if there's a lot of handholding that you have to do or educating you have to do when it comes to these projects and conversations with clients.
Holly? Yeah, definitely. I've found that working on these sort of projects that my time is, you know, maybe double, even triple that on, you know, another project. And yeah, I think having kind of more check-in meetings with the product owner, reviewing the backlog, in addition to the other agile ceremonies, you know, there's an additional amount of sort of FaceTime and communication you have to have with that client to make sure that they're happy. And I think, you know, as a client, if I was on that side, I would feel maybe a sense of more pressure on me in terms of, you know, we always sort of go back to the client and say, you know, as a product owner, you know, you are in control of the vision and the priorities for the project. And I think, you know, if I was one of our clients, you know, we support them a lot. But I think at the end of the day, they're making the decisions of what is in or out of scope at each point, and making, you know, that decision sort of weighing on them to make sure that their budget doesn't expand, you know, too much, is, you know, in some degree on their heads to contain it and to push back. You know, does it fulfill one of our KPIs to the project? You know, can we launch without it? Can we hand crank it? Is there a different way we can deliver this without building the functionality yet? You know, asking the team to challenge the client, but the team to, you know, push back on creating new stories and adding sort of complexity in until it's absolutely needed.
I mean, in essence, what you're doing is you're moving away from selling deliverables, as in a website or a web app or whatever, to delivering, to selling skills and people and time, which is a very different mindset. It's almost like more like selling a lawyer's time, you know, that lawyers, you know, don't sell results, they sell their time. Sam, have you got something to add?
Yeah, I mean,
this?
Just listening to the conversation, it's fascinating because to me, it all boils down to trust. That's the big, you know, circling right back around to the beginning. One of the biggest differences, I think, between Waterfall and Agile is that the level of trust required or enforced or, you know, minimized. So in Waterfall, you know, you don't, as a client, you don't need to be as trusting because there it is written down what you're going to get, how much it's going to cost, and sometimes by when. And many suppliers will hold you to that, you know. Many clients will hold you to that. So it removes the risk factor for a client. I think when it comes to working in an agile way, it doesn't just require trust from the supplier and the client. It the whole way through, right? Whoever's doing it, the production teams, the managers of that company, the finance, everyone has to really have a higher level of trust that everyone's going to, you know, do their best. Because the way it should be argued to a client is that, yes, you know, we can't promise that we're going to give you what you think you want now by a certain date, by a certain time. But what we can guarantee is that for that price and by that time, using this process of prioritization and constant collaboration, we're actually going to give you the most value for that time and that budget. But that's a big sell. You know, it's really about getting the trust that that is what they're, you know. So let's say they have a 3-month timeline and a budget that accommodates that. A client that knows that the supplier, you know, the agency is going to deliver the most valuable work in those 3 months, which is the whole point, really, of working that way. It requires trust. It requires evidence. I mean, it's a big sell. But if you get that trust, I think you're on to a winner. It's a mistake to think that a client should just think it sounds great or just trust you with no evidence.
Mm, absolutely. That's a really good point to wrap up on. It sums it up for me perfectly. And it's a winner for everybody concerned. It's, you know, it's also a winner for the client. If they get an agency they can trust and they know will put in the best effort that they possibly can in that time, it works out better for them as well. So It's all about the relationship, as is everything we've talked about on this entire season. It's all about relationships and getting those relationships to work. Okay, let's quickly look at our final sponsor before we wrap up this week's show. Our final sponsor is FreshBook, which is a super intuitive tool for making and creating and sending invoices in an extremely simple way. Using FreshBook only takes about 30 seconds to create and send an invoice. Which I think is time well spent in order to get paid. You can add your own logo, color schemes, all that kind of stuff. The client can pay you online, which can seriously improve how quickly you get paid. Trust me on that. FreshBooks could also show you whether or not a client has looked at the invoice that you've emailed them, which I always think is a very telling little metric that they provide. And you can send late payment reminders automatically to a client, which means you're not spending all your time chasing down late payments. And also, if it's automated, then it doesn't damage the relationship with the client in the same kind of way. You can also use FreshBooks to set up a deposit. It's got a deposit feature. So when you first win a project, you can streamline all of that initial deposit. They've got loads of other extra features, including cash flow tracking, time tracking. But really, the most important thing is that getting started with FreshBooks is extremely simple. Even if you're not a numbers person, really, especially if you're not a numbers person. FreshBooks is offering a month of unrestricted use to all of the listeners to this show, totally free right now. You don't even need to enter a credit card to get going. To claim your free month, go to freshbooks.com/Boag World and enter Boag World UX Show in the How Did You Hear About Us section. So that's it. And this is the awkward part. Marcus usually does a joke now. He's given me a joke to do. But to be honest, my heart's not in it. So I'm going to say the words because then I've done my bit. But don't expect any delivery. I think this whole joke thing is ridiculous. And I should, if I had my way, we would stop it. But Marcus insists. This is from Bob's Salmon, who said, "Someone threw a bottle of omega-3 pills at me, but it's okay. I only got superficial oil injuries." Yeah. See, that was the joke he picked out. And you wonder why we don't do jokes on this show.
He picks
that was a setup.
It isn't mine. I swear to you, he thought that was a good joke.
It's the way you tell him, Paul.
The way I tell them. I tell them better than Marcus does.
But there was definitely some kind of contempt about that delivery.
I will give you that. There was a level of contempt. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. It's so great to hang out with you all. That's it for this season. It's been a really good one, talking about project management and management issues. One of the most popular seasons we've ever done. Interestingly, I'll tell you, Brett, you've got a claim to fame. I don't know whether you knew this, but before this season, you came on and talked about project management issues, and that was the most popular podcast episode we've ever published.
What?
I know. So, you know, we've had, you know, Jeffrey Zeldman and, you know, really important, you know, amazing people on the show. But no, nothing compared to you.
Well, I'm not surprised, Brett.
Well,
oh,
yeah.
Thank you. I'm shocked. I'm going to go do the happy dance.
But seriously, but it shows how, I'm not saying, obviously it was your personality that brought all the people listening, but it shows how much people care about digital project management and what a big subject it is. And it's been great to be able to do a whole season dedicated to it. And thank you guys for participating in it. And thank you for those of you who listened to it. Hope you found it useful. And we'll be back on October the 20th with a new season. So nice long break this time. But it will be good and it will be exciting and it will be panel based. So speak to you then. Goodbye.
Bye.